I, Joanna Stickle, CVAG Clerk, on behalf of the Chair, convene the CVAG Executive Committee meeting for April 26, 2021. We did not receive any public comments for closed session items. The meeting adjourned to closed session at 4 o'clock. Thank you.
Well, you guys are quick. We're getting everybody coming over, Tom. So I told him about 4:45 to make it easy. That way, 3 minutes to pass, everybody can kind of get off, get on. Anybody had to do anything?
Sounds good.
Thank you. A few more jumping on still. Joanna?
Yes.
I don't know if you heard me. I told Tom 4:45, you know, just to get everybody was getting off, give them a few seconds. So we'll go ahead and start after that and we'll do the roll call and we'll run through, but I'd like to, instead of adding people on, we'll see if we can get more to come.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's Scotty. All right, Joanna, you ready?
Oops, I am ready.
All right, so we're gonna convene the regular scheduled meeting for the CVAG Executive Committee. We're coming out of closed session. Can we have roll call, please?
Yes, Blythe? Okay. Cathedral City?
Present.
Coachella?
Here.
Desert Hot Springs?
Present.
Okay. Indian Wells? Okay.
Present.
Thank you. Indio?
Present.
La Quinta?
Present.
Palm Desert?
Palm Desert?
Here.
Palm Springs?
Here.
Rancho Mirage?
Here.
Riverside County 4th District?
Here.
Riverside County 5th District?
Here.
Agua Caliente?
Here.
Cabazon?
Here.
And Torres Martinez. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Joanna. If we could, we don't have it on the agenda, but we usually have the flag salute. I see the flag behind Mr. Perez, but we're going to have it on the screen. If you could lead us, Supervisor Perez, that would be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Please join me in saluting our nation's flag. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, all nations, our God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Perez. And if we can, Mike, could we have a report on action from closed session?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The executive committee met in closed session this afternoon at 4 o'clock. And there was only one item on the closed session agenda pertaining to labor negotiations with the executive director. And there was no reportable action taken in closed session. And there will be a contract amendment for the executive director on the June meeting agenda. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. And let the record reflect that Joey DeConnick here from Blythe is with us also. He's checked in, so we have that. And we'll move on to, we have the member roster, which we already have. We'll move on to item four, which is the public comments on the agenda items. Joanna, do we have anything that has been, needs to be read in the record? Anybody that wants to say anything on the agenda items?
We have no written comments, and I am not seeing any raised hands.
Okay. So thank you. Then we'll move off of public comments. And I have no comments myself, executive director announcements. Mr. Kirk, do you have anything you'd like to share with us, sir?
Yeah, I've got a few items for you. One of which is you'll be hearing from Jonathan Hoylater. And I know all of you are familiar with Jonathan's work, particularly Mayor Hernandez, you and the city of Coachella. I've appointed Jonathan as our transportation director. And Martin will continue to help us with CV Link right away. So Jonathan's on the agenda later, and it's good to have him on board leading our transportation department. Secondly, I know a lot of you heard and some of you were able to participate in our CV Link construction ceremony. And on March 29th, you can see what COVID does to our ceremonies. We even space out the chairs. We don't want them to get infected with one another. We are doing these relatively small ceremonies, and we'll do it on every little section of CV Link. This one really featured a physical and spiritual, perhaps, connection between La Quinta and Indio. We're building a bridge between the spit of land that everybody is sitting on here and over to Indio. So this is the La Quinta side in the middle of your screen, and we're running over to Indio on the right side. This is looking back to the west. CV Link will run along the edge of this and over a beautiful bridge and down to the east part of the Coachella Valley. Again, we are celebrating the start of a $53 million construction project. It was a big deal, and Chairman, you were a big part of that, and of course, Mayor Evans and the rest of your councils were too. So thank you for participating and leading that effort. Lastly, federal earmarks. You've seen some information in the news about federal earmarks. We're still trying to figure out the federal earmark process. Congressman Ruiz's office contacted me and CVAG staff a few weeks ago. I've been in contact with many of you and your staff and your tribal governments and city and county governments as well. We did put a couple of projects in to Congressman Ruiz's office related to signal synchronization and CV Link. We've also been providing support letters wherever we can. And it's my understanding from the congressman that they will start announcing the congressman's community projects. And I gather what this is, it's a list of, I gather, 10 projects upwards of totaling $10 to $15 million. And the congressman will start posting his selection of those projects beginning Wednesday through Friday. And of course, him selecting it doesn't mean that it's awarded the money, but it does mean it's the first step and we'll go through the appropriations process. And it's a real pleasure for me to repeat what the congressman's office shared with me this morning. That is, there are a couple of projects in the fair city of Blythe and surrounding area. So we don't do as much as we would like for the city of Blythe. It's good to hear that the congressman did identify a couple projects out there, along with a few projects in the central part of the Coachella Valley. And as you know, his district extends to the further to the west. And I believe there'll be a project in San Jacinto and maybe in the Hemet area as well. So stay tuned on that. You'll hear more about that starting on Wednesday. With that, Mr. Chairman, that's the end of my report.
Thank you, Mr. Kirk. Yeah, the CV Link presentation and everything that was out there, the groundbreaking, that was very well done. Please, again, thank your staff.
long time coming. It was great to see the dirt already being moved and working on it. And I think a lot of people are excited. So thank your staff again for the great presentation that they presented. And then at the same time, you know, being able to highlight this large project. With that, we'll move on to the consent calendars as items A through F. If anybody wants to pull any item, I understand Mr. Bilocco wants to abstain on item E because of his work with Desert Arc. But other than that, does anybody like to pull anything on the consent calendar? Do we have a motion?
Move the consent.
Looking to second.
Okay, we have a first and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anybody abstain or want to vote no, other than the abstention from Mr. Bilocco on item E? Okay, passed unanimously with the noted for item E for Indian Wells. With that, we'll move over. Nothing was held off the consent calendar. Discuss action to CVAG membership for 29 Palm Band of Mission Indians. Mr. Kirk.
Yeah, and this is a straightforward request. You know, it has been in the working for some time. Your chairman, in fact, initiated this in many ways a couple of months ago when we asked us to approach the tribe, and the tribe did express interest, sent us a letter, and we've done the legalese, and it's up for your recommendation now. The administration personnel committee supports the recommendation, and with your approval, we would send this out to each of the members, and as soon as two-thirds of the members approve it, and of course the tribe does, they become a full member of CVAG. Any questions?
Any questions to Mr. Kirk or anything? I know that the 29 Palm Bend Mission Indians and Chairman Daryl Mike are very excited about joining CVAG and being part of the regional team. I talked to him actually earlier today about some other issues and was very excited about being able to join, and I fully support this, so.
You have a staff recommendation related to approving addendum number 2 to the Third Amendment, bringing the 29 Palms Band of Mission Indians in as a formal member.
Makinta, motion to approve.
Second, Supervisor Perez.
Supervisor Perez, first by Makinta. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anybody opposed or abstain? Great, passed unanimously. And Tom, you'll get that out to all of us so that we can move that forward. What we need to do. So, and then item B is the flooding blow sand project in Western Coachella Valley. Mr. Hoy, I see you're handling this. Take the screen, sir.
Hey, good afternoon, Honorable Chair and committee members. But before I start, I wanted to acknowledge our transportation chair, Scott Mattis. He's been a very strong advocate for finding innovative solutions to the flooding and blow sand problems in the Coachella Valley. Far too often, storms and major wind events force the closure of these regional roadways. People traveling to work, school, and other locations can be cut off and forced to take long detours or be stranded for hours. This can be particularly problematic for traffic heading south from Desert Hot Springs to Interstate 10, who are trying to access Palm Springs. Emergency services personnel are unable to use these regional roads, causing major traffic concerns. In the spring of 2019, the executive committee took action and initiated the flooding and blow sand study. Michael Baker was selected as the consultant. CVAG administered the project and work was coordinated with the affected stakeholders. The study focused on the Western Coachella Valley area, particularly arterials that interconnect communities north and south of Interstate 10. For decades, there have been projects identified in the transportation project prioritization study along these regional corridors. Indian Canyon and Gene Autry Trail are each estimated to cost over $250 million. Although these are the most significant, there are many others in Desert Hot Springs and also Cathedral City that are impacted, adding up to close to $600 million in improvement cost. Now, the object of the flooding and blow sand study was to identify and evaluate alternative concepts that could provide a level of flood protection that's appropriate for the specific location. For example, on North Indian Canyon Drive, the study looked at the 2-mile stretch between I-10 and the Chino Canyon levee. And the study focused improvements where they were needed most, using the latest technology and prefabricated bridge structures to find a cost-effective solution, reducing the improvement cost for this corridor from $250 million to approximately $35 million. Just focusing those improvements where the flooding is most significant. To reduce cross even further, there was another option for an emergency access only structure for $10 million that would just get emergency vehicles through the corridor. Applying this approach to the projects in the study area resulted in significant reduction in costs. Looking at the large projects in Palm Springs and Gene Autry Trail, but also the projects up in Desert Hot Springs area, as well as the Cathedral City projects. This would reduce the overall cost from close to $600 million to closer to just over $100 million for these improvements. Based on the emergency access, traffic volumes, and stormwater flows, the study ranked these projects from low priority, medium priority, and high priority. And at the December Executive Committee meeting, staff was directed to coordinate with Palm Springs, Cathedral City, Desert Hot Springs to advance improvements forward for the next phase. The study recommended projects based on available budget. Staff recommends to move forward with a highly constrained budget. And after meeting with the cities, it was agreed to move forward on one high priority project, which would be the Indian Canyon Drive corridor, and then two medium priority projects, which is essentially Varner Road connecting to Date Palm. On the next steps, staff will issue an RFP for design work for the Indian Canyon Drive between Chino Canyon Levee and the railroad, with the first phase of construction being those stormwater improvements that were identified in the flooding and blow sand report. The same will be done for Varner Road between Palm Drive and Date Palm, and with those first improvements being those identified in the study. The design team will include staff from Palm Springs, Cathedral City, and Desert Hot Springs. The consultant contract will come back to the executive committee for approval. If there's any reimbursement agreements that need to be approved, these will also come back to executive committee, and CVAG will administer the contract. So the recommendation is to direct the executive director to advance these improvements on North Indian Canyon and Varner Road and Date Palm Drive, identified in the flooding and blow sand report. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Mr. Hoy. I'm going to yield to Chairman Mattis to talk about this. I know, and Christy too, but Scott, do you want to weigh in on this as head of transportation?
I don't want to say a whole lot. We've heard this report many times. They're narrowing it down to the work needs to be done and get started to make this a reality in the future. So we appreciate all the staff work that's been on this. And I don't want to bore you with myself and Cathedral City's and Palm Springs' story that we continue to tell about this, but this is a higher priority working together as the Western cities to try to make the access better to our only trauma center here in the Valley. So that's kind of our high priority.
So I tell you, do you like to make a motion? Unless there's any other comment,
I would move the item.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, we got a second. Any other comments or any things? Okay, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed or abstain? All right, passed unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Hoy. Thank you for all your hard work, and thank you to the Transportation Committee for bringing this forward. And now we're going to go into regional transportation project. Mr. Hoy, you have this also, sir.
Yes. Thank you, Honorable Chairman and committee members. At the December 7th meeting, the Executive Committee considered cash flow analysis and discussed alternative revenue sources, project expenditures, and some cost-sharing policies. The reason for doing this is that costs are escalating on projects and major sources of revenue are drying up. And if we look at the funding that the Valley secured for the most recently completed interchange projects, the total cost of those projects were close to $235 million. And out of that total, $235 million, the Valley secured $182 million in outside federal and state funding. and the local funding averaged less than $9 million per project, with the highest local funding going to Jefferson Street, where CBEC's contribution totaled approximately $23 million. Now, compare that to the remaining planned interchanges, where we've secured less than 1% in outside funding. So unless something changes, we have to find a way to fund these projects through our local sources. The transportation project cash flow is a function of revenue versus expenditures. The revenue derives from grant program funding, local jurisdiction share, sales tax, and TUMF, which is development impact fees. And the expenditure side is associated with the transportation project prioritization study and the regional arterial cost estimate. Staff began the cash flow analysis using the current obligated projects in the approved budget as a baseline, and then adding in our potential future projects over the next 5 years resulted in a negative fund balance, as a base project, as our base, our fund balance was $99 million positive. But once we factored in the new projects, we resulted in a negative fund balance of $29 million. This prompted staff to extend the cash flow analysis to a 10-year outlook. By looking at the 10-year project projection and adding in the additional projects anticipated during that period, the negative fund balance increased to $370 million. Focusing on the revenue side, we note that prior to the pandemic, the CVAG estimated Measure A and TUMF revenues to be $22 million and $4 million respectively. It's also important to note that when TUMF was established, TUMF was expected to generate an annual revenue equivalent to Measure A. However, with the pace of development, it never has. Also, the region received $24.8 million in STIP from fiscal years 2016 to 2019. Now, considering the current economic climate, Measure A estimates have been reduced by 16%, TUMF by 25%, and the STIF estimates from 2020 to 2025 have been reduced by 82%. Also, it's important to note that with the 2017 SB1 provided cities and counties a dramatic increase in annual road maintenance and rehabilitation funding. However, CVAG was excluded from this funding. The local cities received $17 million annually for road maintenance, compared to CVAG's annual share of the STIP, which comes out to about $1 million towards our projects, transportation projects. Now, looking at the expenditure side of the cash flow equation, there is $3.4 billion in transportation improvement projects. The majority of that cost is the capacity in improving projects, with that total of 3.4. And as part of this initial cash flow analysis, CVAG considered some optional revenue adjustments to evaluate potential alternatives to address that $370 million projected shortfall. CVAG currently has a policy that after outside funding is factored in, the remaining cost of the regional transportation projects would be funded on a 75-25 split. However, that was not always the case. CVAG could return to that original 50-50 formula split, and the initial projections of that would revenue over the next 10 years reduces project expenditures by $166 million, reducing that negative fund balance from $370 to $204 million. CVAG also considered increasing sales tax. CVAG currently gets funding from Riverside County's Measure A, which is a half-cent sales tax. That measure that the voters in 2002 extended for another 30 years. And by increasing that sales tax to a full 1 cent, projections show that over the next 10 years, this would generate $332 million, reducing a negative fund balance from $370 to $38 million. We also looked at just combining both of these options, the sales tax increase, along with adjusting the cost share formula. If we look at those projections, we see that we have the fund balance of finally in the positive $81 million. The next steps, today, staff is outlining, the next step in the cash flow analysis process. With the first step is to look at opportunities to reduce the expenditures. CVAG will issue an RFP to evaluate, do value engineering services and approach our transportation projects on the TPPS, similar to the way that we have done for the flooding and blow sand report. Value engineering is a process of assembling a multidisciplinary team to look at available information, to find innovative ways to meet project goals and to reduce costs. Staff will also prioritize construction readiness by maintaining the 75-25 funding formula for the pre-construction phases of work. And finally, staff is considered preserving the limited cash flow by reverting back to the 50-50 formula for the construction phase. The Transportation Committee discussed this option, but ultimately recommended that CVAG cost sharing formula should remain 75-25 for now. But the Transportation Committee also recommended that the policy should be reviewed in another 6 months after the value engineering study is complete. With that, that completes my staff report. So the first option, the first recommendation is to prepare the value engineering study. And the second is to look at the cost sharing policy and come back with some additional recommendations to the executive committee.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hoy. Any questions, comments from anyone?
Sure. Could I add to Jonathan, sure. Just very briefly and related to, in fact, what's going on in Washington, D.C. I think the Transportation Committee wasn't as much waiting for the value engineering study as waiting for federal dollars to come down. And we are obviously all paying a lot of attention to infrastructure efforts. And I think the committee was saying, well, let's see how much federal money comes into the system, because if a lot of federal money comes down, we certainly could get by with a 75-25, at least in the short run. So that was certainly part of the logic, I think, behind the committee's discussions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Kelly, and then we'll go down to Mr. Hernandez.
Yes, quickly. Would the recommendations from these two studies come back through the Transportation Committee? That would be my expectation. I'm just confirming.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Hernandez?
Yeah, I just want to just kind of somewhat echo Tom's comments that we got to do everything possible to make sure that our projects are ready and project ready to, because if there is some federal funding that comes down, we need to be able to build tomorrow. I will just remind everybody that when you look at the interchanges that actually got built, they got built because the Coachella Valley saw an infusion of Tiger money during the Obama administration. So we were in the same predicament in terms of not having enough cash to build those projects. And I think we benefited greatly because we were project ready.
Yeah, I think we need to be
Mayor, you might remember we were able to take advantage of that readiness, and we received $40 million of the $70 million that came to Riverside County. So some might say more than our fair share, but the reason it was is we are ready to roll, and that's certainly our approach right now. And Mayor Kelly, my short answer, I'd like to elaborate. The projects in our TPPS are 99.9% your projects. They're projects from each of the cities. And I say 99%, CV Link is a CVAG regional project, and signal synchronization certainly is. All those other projects, those 250 some projects, are projects in the cities. We don't have the authority to change your projects. However, as Mayor Holstich saw, and certainly Mayor Mattis and Gregory as well, when CVAG evaluated the projects in the western part of the Coachella Valley, we didn't say this is what we shall do. We said this is what we suggest we do. And then we went back to each of those cities and said, we think there might be a better way of accomplishing the objectives. And that's what we would do with the other projects in your jurisdictions as well.
Thank you, Mr. Kirk. And with that, we'll move on. Mr. Bellocco, did you want to say something, sir? Okay.
No.
So we have a request from staff to look at two recommendations. Any other comments or questions or concerns, or do I hear a motion? Crickets?
Move to approve.
Thank you. We have a second?
Second.
Okay, so we have first and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed or abstain? All right, passing this. And Mr. Hoy, thank you for your two presentations. We'll move on now to item D's update on a regional early action planning REAP funding. Ms. Felci, are you handling this for us?
I am, yes. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. And with me, we also have Peter Satin, who is with our team. Before you is a recommendation to accept $558,000 in REAP funding. This may seem familiar to you. This has been an item that has been on your information calendar and through the committee's process throughout fall. The state's fiscal year 2019-2020 budget included two programs to address the housing crisis from a planning perspective. So there was LEAP with an L, which went to your cities, and REAP with an R, which is more of the regional planning dollars that were available. There was a non-competitive allocation of funds, and CBAG was eligible to receive approximately $558,000, which could be used on one or more planning efforts that boost housing production and related supportive infrastructure. So throughout last year, we sought ideas from your staffs, from our member jurisdictions, through community stakeholders and the general public. Well, we did a series of presentations and vetted those ideas. And in December, we submitted two concurrent projects that were eligible under the REAP funding guidelines. So they're outlined in your staff report for you. The first one is a project that will support the Affordable Housing Catalyst Fund as part of the action plan that was developed by Lift to Rise through its Housing Collaborative Action Network. And REAP funds will be used to pay for a fund manager that will do a series of tasks, including drafting and implementing an investment plan and working on the underwriting standards as well. And the second project that would be funded by REAP builds on the direction that was discussed in early 2020 when there was a discussion that involved all of you as well as the Transportation Committee about ways to fund transportation projects and homelessness and housing long-term. This project would result in a comprehensive analysis of funding options that could be generated from a broad range of sources to address key housing needs, including the availability of both affordable and workforce housing, as well as addressing rent burden concerns. The project for this one does include quite a bit of community engagement to understand the feedback from our community. So this went through the Homelessness Committee in February, and thank you, Chair Holsich, for leading that conversation. That led to a request from the Homelessness Committee to do some additional review of the scope of work, which we've done through the Homelessness Committee's CV Hart Ad Hoc Committee, and there are a few members on the call of that ad hoc committee. Based on the feedback there, we provided additional details in the scope of work and including the draft RFP that we are looking to do to hire a consultant for the study itself. And we identified additional deliverables and benchmarks for the proposal with Lift to Rise. Based on that feedback, we did go back to the Homelessness Committee, which is supportive of moving forward with these two projects and the recommendation before you, which would to authorize the executive director to take the steps necessary to accept the funding and begin these projects. Once the MOU has been signed with SCAG, we would enter into an MOU with Lift to Rise and also begin the work of securing a consultant for the regional study. I would note that these funds all need to be used by June of 2023, so you will see this item coming back to you again. I think I've kind of given a broad brush of the staff report, but if you have any questions, I'm happy to address.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Felci, and Peter, if you need anything, he can add into it. Ms. Host, would you like to
say anything? As you kind of leading the charge, we want to thank you for your leadership on this item and also on item E, which will be coming up. Any questions or anything you'd like to take from here, or anybody have any thoughts?
Chair, if I can, I'll just thank staff for working with us. I know the committee raised a few concerns and staff worked with us to bring this back to this committee in a thorough way. So thank you to everyone for that process.
Okay, if there's no other comments, did we hear a motion, or is that a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve.
Okay, first, we have a second, or any other comments?
Second.
Okay, there we go. We got a first and many seconds. All those in favor say aye.
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 Anybody opposed or abstain? Nobody passing on the money. Okay, great. Passed unanimously. Move on to item E, which is CV Housing First 2021 progress and continued support from Desert Healthcare District Foundation. Mr. Kirk, are you handling this for us, sir?
I am. And with the capable help of Tom Cox, who all of you know does the difficult work on our homeless program along with his staff. Just to warn everybody, this is not the same presentation that most of you have seen now two or three or four times, or at least most of you. I do plan on making that presentation to the City of Indian Wells and the City of Cathedral City in May. I know, again, many of you have seen the longer presentation about our Housing First program, and I want to share with you that your chair of the Homeless Committee, I think, called me out on it. My presentation really isn't to share what we're doing, it's to share what we're not doing. I want to manage expectations that we're really focused on one component of the homeless problem, and that is chronic homelessness. And so the first part of this presentation just reminds people, and certainly myself, of our focus. And this is our first quarter report. And again, to remind everybody, the chronically homeless. And as I mentioned to anybody that's seen the presentation, when we operated Roy's, we did a fantastic job of helping a lot of people. But if those clients had major drug problems, we didn't let them into Roy's. Or major mental health problems, we didn't let them into Roy's. Or if they had a violent past, we didn't let them into Roy's. And when you looked at the homeless population, we did a nice job of helping families and those that may have been on the street for the first time, but that chronically homeless person, and I know this is a caricature, but the person that we see on the street day after day and year after year, sometimes with a shopping cart, sometimes with pets and property, those are the folks that we weren't helping at Roy's. And frankly, even if we asked them to come to Roy's, they probably would have said no. So, Tom Cox developed a list, a by-name list, working with each of your sheriff's deputies that work in homelessness and your city police departments and many others. And we have a list of 200 folks, and you've already heard some of the stories of people that we've helped off of the streets that have been, again, chronically homeless, meaning they've been on the street for over 2 years, and they probably have some of the problems I just mentioned. These are a couple folks that have been helped off of the streets and into permanent housing. How have we done in the first quarter? Well, I'm gonna try to explain this as quickly and easily as I can. It's a complicated subject, and I don't speak social services. So I've tried to boil it down into a way that makes sense for me. And if each of those colors represents an individual on our CV 200 list, you can think of it as kind of a donut, and there is a bite out of it, and I'll explain why in a minute. And each of these homeless folks, we want to check into our crisis stabilization units, those 24 units out there throughout the community where we provide housing for up to 90 days. In our first quarter, January 1st to the end of March, we've checked in one quarter of the chronically homeless people that have been on our streets for over 2 years. One quarter of them. 50 people. And of those that we've checked in, and again, this is just temporary housing, 20 of them have been moved into a permanent housing situation. It's a really good start to our program. And as I've shared with all of you, under our in-house program,
I'm going to be brutally honest with all of you, and our staff is going to be brutally honest with me about where our successes are and where our failures are. And when I say our failures, I really mean the client's failure. Client has been given the opportunity to work with us over 90 days, but sometimes they check in, and after 90 days or so, they're back on the street. In this case, 6 of those clients are back on the streets, unfortunately. Tom Cox, can you describe one of those situations?
Yeah, this is M. She was not successful in our program. She was not receptive to case management visits. She continued to struggle with substance misuse while she was in our program, and she was exited from the CSH program after 30 days.
And you've probably already done the math. We certainly have people that were in the units and just haven't found placement yet. At the end of March, we had 24 of those clients still waiting for placement. This was one that was waiting for placement. Tom, can you update us?
Yeah, this is S. She was homeless in the streets of Indio for 20 years. While S was in our CSH unit, she secured her ID, Social Security card, EBT, medical insurance, and her eyeglasses. She also started her first job last month. She's also pictured here with her new bike and her work clothes. S is currently working with her case manager, Stephanie, to find permanent housing.
And you might remember, and this is described in the staff report, we really categorize the client's success stories in two ways: through crisis stabilization units or these small apartments, and also rapid resolution. Sometimes we could help somebody off the street and into permanent housing without going through that intermediate step of a crisis stabilization unit. It's called rapid resolution. It might end up being fixing a car or providing a down payment on an apartment. And of the CV200, 5 people have been helped off of your streets, our community, and into permanent housing. And this is my favorite photo so far. Tom, can you tell her story?
Yes, this is Jay. Her husband was a Vietnam vet who died of Agent Orange. Jay became homeless after her husband's death in the cities of Palm Springs, Desert Hot Springs, and Cathedral City. Jay was assisted by her case manager and niece with rapid resolution funding and is renting her own place for the first time in several years. Jay also was recently approved for her own VA loan and will be soon purchasing her own place.
It's fantastic. It really is. And of course, but wait, there is more. And you remember I mentioned that donut had a bite taken out of it. And that's because we know it's not as simple as on January 1st, identifying 200 people and assuming that list is not going to grow. It will grow. And we are helping other households out. When I say households, most of the chronically homeless that we're helping are single people, single clients. But in some cases, we've been helping families out in larger households. We call it the CV200 plus list. And we've actually helped 5 households, making up 17 individuals, into crisis stabilization units. They've checked in. And some of them have checked out, 3 households making up 8 individuals. And there's some rapid resolution success stories that were not a part of our original list as well. We've touched already 2 households with 3 individuals and moved them all into permanent housing. And so this graph gets really complicated when you put it all together, but for our purposes, gray is bad. Other colors are good. The gray represents the chronically homeless that, frankly, we weren't helping at Roy's. And I'm not sure shelters are very well equipped to help the chronically homeless in all cases. We are focusing our attention on your and our community's biggest challenges, those 200 plus chronically homeless people on the street. And we want to move them from the light colors of checking in to our units and checking out into permanent housing, those housed, the dark colors. So far, first quarter, 25 people off the street. call it now CV-175. Five additional through rapid resolution, or five more that were not a part of the original list, I should say, and 11 individuals. So we're trying to reduce the size of that donut. And I just thought I'd share with you other information that we are collecting and monitoring. How long are our clients staying in our units? And we're gonna learn more about our own program as we gather statistics, the success stories you've already heard about. People like this, on average, stay in our units about 75 days. Unfortunately, the failures, those that don't take advantage of this opportunity, are staying in our units the maximum amount of time. And we're kind of rethinking this. We want to give them every opportunity to change their life around. But I think Tom and the team are thinking twice about that, and maybe not keeping them in 90 days, but maybe it's 45 or 60. If they're not taking steps to help themselves, they're taking up space from somebody that is willing to help themselves. So CV-200, among the next steps you've heard about, we obviously are going around to each of the cities to update them on the program. Thank you for your reception at those city council meetings. The county continues to be a huge supporter. Thank you, Supervisor Perez in particular, and Greg Rodriguez of his staff. We also gave this presentation, or the bigger presentation, to the Desert Healthcare District Board and Foundation. And they reacted by providing a $500,000 match. It's a big deal. And their match is predicated on cities maintaining the same level of contribution. And so far, as you know, we've received commitments in the last couple of years from a majority of our cities. The vast majority. There's one we're going to visit with in May, Mr. Bellocco, and we're hopeful to get
yes.
a contribution from the city of Indian Wells as well. And again, the county continues to be a huge supporter financially and otherwise of the program. We've provided this information to the homeless committee. Just wanted to share it with you. In some cases, we've gotten confirmation from the cities that they are willing to pay, but CVAG didn't send an invoice. So we are checking in with each of your finance departments and making sure that we get current with all of our accounts receivable. With that, I'm asking you to authorize me to accept an agreement with the Desert Healthcare District to bring in $500,000 to the program. With that, I'd be happy to try to address any policy level questions, and Tom Cox is on board to answer the tough questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kirk. Any questions, Mr. Kirk, or any thoughts on the presentation? Very well done. Thank you, Mr. Cox, Mr. Kirk, for your work, and Christy for your continued support as chairman of the Homeless Committee. But is there anybody that has any comments, or anybody would like to weigh in on this? Christy, go ahead.
Thank you, if I can. Thank you for the presentation. I think this is exactly the type of local data that we always wanted about our homelessness program. And it just shows how successful our program is, how it's a model, really, especially on regional collaboration. And really, we're going to learn a lot of lessons having it in-house that we didn't have before. So thank you to everyone for their leadership on that. And thank you for the Desert Healthcare District for continuing that match. You know, I think as we move forward, our goal is really to have the contributions and participation of every member and the cities. So that's the match really goes a long way in making sure that we can continue to all jointly fund this. And I'm a little embarrassed to see Palm Springs' name on there. But one thing that we've also asked, and I've asked at my city, is to make this an allocation in the budget so that we can just do that automatically and we don't make Tom come and beg for it every year. And then obviously there's all this staff work to follow up to find the money to make sure we get paid. So I would love to see other cities join us in making sort of a direct budget allocation, since we know this is such an important program. We're seeing results. I think we'll continue to see results in the future. So thank you very much, all of you, for your leadership.
Thank you. Any other comments? Or I take that as Christy giving us a motion. If and there's no other comments, do I have a second? $500,000, people.
Second.
All right, Mr. Michael, thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Opposed or abstained? Okay, it passes unanimously. Thank you. We'll move on to item number 8. Now is informational. There's items A through L. You can look at that at your leisure so that you can see that. Just tidbits of everything going on. And then we'll move on to item number 9, which is the slate of items. Ms. Erin Sassy's got a quick report for us. Ms. Sassy, take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Executive Committee members. It's nice to see all of you this evening. Just wanted to provide you with a legislative update. I know I haven't been able to give you one in a little while. As you all know, the federal government is giving cities funds directly. I know we're still waiting for the guidance from the Treasury. That's supposed to be released around May 10th, but basically the funds at this point, from what we know, can be used to help small businesses, nonprofits, industries such as tourism and hospitality. It's supposed to be able to go towards revenue loss for all of you. You can provide premium pay to essential employees, and you can provide government services affected by a revenue reduction as a result of COVID. Also, the state budget, the May revise, should be coming out also around May 10th. And I know that we have asked the governor to provide funding for all of you as cities. He did acknowledge in February when he came to our board meeting that he does know that cities have suffered with COVID. So we'll see what happens around May 10th with that. A couple legislative items. I know that some of you sit on our policy committees and some positions are going to our state board this week. So we will have more positions, but there's a lot of bills making its way through the legislature right now. And a lot of them are still pretty bad. A couple I wanted to highlight for you, SB 556 would require local governments to make space available on your street light poles and traffic signal poles and utility poles without really allowing for your local authority for that. So we have a opposed position. We do have a letter already on file. Also, there is one, I know you were all discussing SB 1 funds earlier today. There is a bill, SB 640, that would allow two or more eligible cities or a county and a city to partner up and fund multiple projects with your SB 1 funds. So we're supporting that bill. That might be something that could help all of you. A couple other items I wanted to bring up. There is AB 215. This basically would require cities to have a mid-cycle housing element consultation with HCD if your housing production is below the regional average. We're opposed to this. I think that this is trying to align you with the Housing Crisis Act of 2019. I know many of you sent in opposition letters. It was SB 330 last year, in 2019. We're opposed to that. We also have a letter on file. Also on the homelessness front, there's AB 816. This would require that on or before January 1st, 2023, that each local agency submit a plan to the Housing and Community Development, so HCD, a plan to meet benchmarks by reducing homelessness by 90% by 2029. So it's a complicated issue. I know you're all trying to do your best, but that would be something that would be very complicated for all of you. Another really bad bill that we're concerned about is AB 989. It creates a housing appeals committee. This would require HCD to establish this appeals committee where developers could appeal to the committee a decision of you from a city or a county to either deny the application or approve an application with conditions. So basically it's taking a lot of your local control away. And this is something you definitely should all be sending in opposition letters from. We do have our letter out officially on that as well. I know that some of you are interested in
Aaron, you just muted.
Sorry about that. Apparently I hit the button. There's a bill that I know a couple of you have been watching. It's AB 617, that you could share your RENA number. So you could have like one jurisdiction could pay another jurisdiction. That bill's become a 2-year bill. So it's not moving forward at this point. I think it doesn't have a lot of likelihood that it will continue, but next year that's something you can continue to weigh in on. Another bill is SB 619. This is the bill that would extend your SB 1383 requirements for another year. So it's giving a delay. There's been some issues with this bill. There's a tipping fee that's potentially included. The author has been making some amendments. We have a support and concept position for this. So if you want to send in something, we definitely have a letter you can use, but we are trying to get that year extension for the organic waste implementation requirements. So you should definitely be weighing in on that. I know I've gone through a lot, but there's one more because I think this could impact some of you. It's AB 1181. This would prohibit cities and counties from imposing or collecting license fees from restaurants from January 1st, 2020 through 2021. And if you have collected fees, you would be required to refund them. So just wanted to flag that for you. I know a lot of you are doing a lot for businesses, but you still have to make sure they're following requirements. So if you did collect fees, you'd have to reimburse them.
So you mentioned licenses. Does that mean even business license fees?
For restaurants.
So even if you have something under municipal code in your city?
Yes.
The state would overrule that local control?
Yes.
So they want us to put homeless people in houses. They want us to build and quadruple our houses. There's still no money to build houses and it's not affordable to build houses. And yes, and now they want to put microwave ovens back on the flagpoles and the light poles, and it's out of control. Sacramento is out of control.
We'll say on that note, we have
on
our
that note
coming up. I'm going to be setting up meetings with our legislators. So I would encourage all of you to participate once I get hopefully those meetings set up, and you can reiterate all of those issues that you just mentioned. But I'd be happy to take questions. I appreciate the opportunity to update all of you.
Any questions, Ms. Sassy? And Aaron, if you could send us a list of that, maybe of some, just a breakdown of a little bit. I mean, you went through quite a few, and I know we know a lot of them, but some of them we might not have looked at. And you know, as they're being amended and changing some of the
right stuff. I have a very long list that I will send with all of our positions at this point, but know that they change all the time.
Appreciate it. Anything else of Ms. Sassy? Anybody? All right. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you for the cheery news. And I agree with Linda. The Sacramento is out of control when it comes to local jurisdictions and their implementation of what they feel is in our best interest. So we'll just deal with that as we deal with it. Number 10 is public comments on non-agenda items. I take it, Joanna, we have anything? Anybody?
I do not see any raised hands.
Okay.
We're good.
Then we will stand adjourned to our next meeting. The executive committee will be Monday, June 7th, 2021 at 4:30. And I guess we have a closed session. It seemed like everybody enjoyed having it earlier than later. So if we do have a closed session, we will make sure that it's on and the front, and we'll kind of fine tune that as we're going along. And I will stand adjourned and see you later at 5:40, and appreciate everything you're doing and be safe. And we'll talk to you soon.
Good job. Have a nice
night. Thank you. Take care.